The Federal News Countdown, as we do every week at this time, features the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. And this week it's kind of an IT emphasis, I would say. Bob Otto of Agilex, the former CIO at the Postal Service, is here on the Countdown. Great to see you as always, my friend.
Always great to be here.
And Dan Mintz, the former CIO at Transportation and now with PowerTech, is my other panelist today. And I would say the biggest hockey fan in the world of the federal government?
Yes. I have been going to Washington Capitals games, which tells you I'm not the wisest hockey fan for over 30 years.
Are you going tonight? Do you have tickets for tonight?
Nope. I don't. I go to 25 home games a year.
Okay. Out of 41?
41.
Okay. So that's still a pretty good ratio. Serious stuff. We have the game on Federal News Radio, of course, tonight after this show ends. We start, as we always do on the Federal News Countdown, with the number three story of the week. Bob Otto's number three is from NextGov in the headline, "If you think you'll save money with cloud computing, think again." Some hackles being raised by this because it's, what, 3 years now that we've been hearing about how cloud computing will be a panacea, and some folks are starting to doubt that a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I think we were talking about this earlier this year. Actually, cloud computing's sort of getting boring. But if you did a survey amongst probably 1,000 IT people, they would all probably tell you that the reason they're doing cloud computing is to save money.
Mm-hmm.
But this recent survey of 3,500 people, our organizations globally, basically came back and said that less than half of them saved any money at all. So, you know, what I really liked about this article really points out why CIOs should consider using cloud. And you know, don't focus on the cost savings alone. That's not where it's really at. So if you implement cloud, can you save money? Sure. Can you provide and enforce standard architectures? Absolutely. Can you get better business agility? Yeah, sure, you can do that. And you can even provision your data to be accessed by different devices. But, you know, from a savings perspective, think about this. Most CIOs don't have service costs defined, and they don't know what a true total cost of ownership of a system is. So how would you be able to show your before and after cost savings and demonstrate that? So it's kind of hard for CIOs. So one of the things I'd probably tell a CIO if I was giving them advice is, look, if you're going to do this and you're going to use this technology, you ought to do it agency-wide, and you ought to develop a detailed cloud strategy and a roadmap to be successful. Because just transitioning a few of these applications to meet the cloud-first goals, that's not going to leverage the real benefits of this technology and save you money.
So dipping the toe in the water with email and then moving to the next thing, and the next thing isn't what you think. That's not the path?
No, you're really going to get your synergy when you get a lot of this over there. But again, in talking to a lot of the CIOs, I find that many of them are just dabbling in some of this because they want to see what they can gain from this. And I don't know how they can get savings out of this first set of applications they move over, and that's what the survey is basically saying.
Well, GSA says they've saved a ton of money just moving their email application, and that's where they are so far.
Well, you know, I guess they have before and after costs savings then measured.
Mm-hmm.
Many agencies, if you don't have asset management, I don't know how you can say you have these costs.
The whole idea of the money savings, too, that was one of the things that Vivek pushed with the 25-point plan. Stephen Van Roekel pointed it out again yesterday. Cloud will save us this much. 30 to 40 million is the number that he attached to it when FedRAMP rolled out yesterday. What do you think FedRAMP plays a role in changing this dynamic at all?
Clearly, I think FedRAMP, as directed by the federal CIO, is part of an initiative that should have been done many, many years ago about this standardization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you build a security model, then other agencies should not rebuild this model. Build something and use it multiple times. I mean, I just don't understand why every agency has to reinvent the wheel. And we're all basically in these agencies doing similar things.
Bob Otto's story number three is from NextGov. The headline, if you think you'll save money with cloud computing, think again. Dan Mintz, your story number three is from GCN, Government Computer News. The headline is, banning email in the office, is this a good idea? The impetus for this story was the CEO of Europe's biggest IT services company plans to find out if people can live without email, announcing a plan to ban it for his company's 74,000 employees who are located in 42 countries. Now, I came away from this story and from a story that this story links to in the Telegraph in London, that collaboration isn't out the window. Electronic collaboration isn't going to be gone at this company. But it really is kind of a forward-thinking vision about what the workplace might look like 5-10 years from now.
Yeah, it's an interesting article. I mean, there's a sentence in it where they talk about that the CEO claims that only 10% of email is really usable. You know, there is an old joke in about marketing that 50% of the spending in marketing in this company is bad, but you can never figure out which 50%. So the same thing with that. You know, I personally don't think it's entirely realistic. I think email serves a purpose. And it is interesting. And there's one sentence in here that I found it's interesting how things have changed so quickly. It talks about that he wants people to communicate face-to-face by phone, which is probably unrealistic for a company that's global, mm-hmm. or via text messaging or Facebook-style interfaces. Now, a global company CEO saying that they wanted their employees to communicate by Facebook-style interfaces 5 years ago, people would have just sort of looked at them strangely. What did you really mean?
Mm-hmm.
To me, what it's commenting on is how quickly information sharing and communication is changing radically.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're moving away from classical ways of communicating to ways of doing different kinds of information sharing. I mean, personally, I don't think you can get rid of email, but it is true that you have to change some of the ways of doing communications.
Mm-hmm. This story is by Kevin McCanny, the managing editor at GCN, and he writes, Derek Thompson of The Atlantic lays out the advantages of doing away with email and has a link to The Atlantic piece, but ultimately concludes that, and I think this is the most insightful sentence on this subject that I've read, Facebook messaging and GChats can be just as much of a time suck as email. It's not about the technology, it's about the users, and that's exactly right. If somebody's going to send stupid emails at work, they're also going to post goofy links on a Facebook exchange or whatever, probably, right?
Yeah, all of these topics are part of a broader issue, which is how do you do knowledge management mm-hmm. at organizations? You know, the federal government deals with this because of being able to do record storage and retrieval and things like that. There are all these knowledge management issues. So the fundamental question is, what are you trying to do with knowledge? How do you accumulate it? How do you retrieve it? How do you share it? And rather than just trying to flail at it by saying, okay, tomorrow I'm going to wake up and ban email, the more important question that, in my opinion, a leader of an organization has to deal with, this is the kind of information sharing I want to enable. What are the toolkits, whether they be wikis or other kind of communication tools that I can make available that allow the sharing the way I want and the information retrieval that I want?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think the focus really needs to be on.
And that strategy makes a lot of sense in my view, because if you're moving people to a knowledge management system like you're talking about, where they are directed to specific applications for specific purposes, then the email can become a fallback position, but it can also be, it would seem to me, reprioritized as far as how much time it takes out of an employee's day.
And again, the leaders will drive that behavior by what they use and what they pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
If the CEO or an agency head or a departmental head uses a wiki or a blog or Facebook or instant messaging, everyone else will too.
Mm-hmm.
If they say it but they don't do it, then people will notice that and just go back to whatever habits they have.
But Francis, This whole technology has changed us into introverts. Dan and I could have offices side by side, and rather than me walk over 10 feet and talk to him about a subject, I would just as soon use my email or my BlackBerry or whatever it may be to send him some. We've created this this whole barrier now to people working together. They'd rather use the technology to be the intermediary.
So yes, but the other thing is we've increased at the same time. There's all these life dichotomies. The information sharing to people that otherwise wouldn't get it is really dramatic. When I go to meetings nowadays, I mean, I Twitter and I do a blog mostly for my own entertainment. But when I go, it doesn't have wide readership. When I go to events, I'm amazed at the number of people who will come up to me and say they've read the blog or they know what movie I went to or things like that. Some of that obviously very informal. But information sharing, you have this dichotomy that how do you keep the culture? That's what you're talking about, but still take advantage of the unbelievably powerful information sharing that does not exist in one-to-one communication.
Plug your blog, because it's I read it. I'm one of the seven people that reads it, and it's really good.
There's
actually.
Eight, really.
No, it peaked at 40. So my wife and I argued over a domain name. I wanted to be danielmintz.com,
yeah.
And I lost.
Uh-huh.
So it's OurOwnLittleCorner.com.
All right.
All English words, and I publish at least every week or two.
And your Twitter handle is TechnoGeezer.
Linda Curitan, the CIO at NASA, said that TechnoGeezer described me perfectly, and thus it stuck.
All right. It's a terrific and noble way to get that handle, and we should link those up at federalnewsradio.com so somebody listening can follow you and read your blog. Dan Mintz's story number 3 in the countdown from GCN, banning email in the office. Is this a good idea? You can read it and all of the stories that Dan and Bob Otto have chosen for this week's Federal News Countdown. Back with number 2 from both when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
To make a commitment is to see things through, confident that no matter what the obstacles, we can build something better together. With the planned combination of AT&T and T-Mobile, we're making a commitment to create a stronger network for all our customers. We will invest an additional $8 billion and build out the next generation of mobile broadband to nearly everyone in America. Building that network will mean better coverage, better call quality, and faster downloads. But it will also create as many as 96,000 American jobs, and we will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We're committed to investing in America now. Why? Well, we know it's good business, because America has always been, and always will be, a smart investment. AT&T. Rethink possible.
Give the gift of Caps Hockey with a holiday gift pack. Caps holiday gift packs include 2 tickets to 3 exciting Caps games, an autographed puck, 2 Caps hats, and 2 passes for public skates at the Kepler Capitals Iceplex. There's no better way to celebrate the holidays. For more information on Caps holiday gift packs and to find out how you can win an ultimate Caps holiday experience, call 202-266-CAPS. Text HOLIDAY to 43803 or log on to washingtoncaps.com/holiday.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies. and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's what's coming up on Monday morning's Federal Drive. Federal CIO Stephen Van Roekel joins us to talk about a ready-made open government data platform. It can be shared with other nations. It's called data.gov in a box. And labor wants federal contractors to meet some new goals for hiring Americans with disabilities. That and more Monday morning at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, go to federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by experts in the world of the federal government. This week it's Bob Otto and Dan Mintz, and we're up to...
Number two!
Bob Otto, your second most important federal news story of the week is from Federal News Radio's website. The headline, USPS aims to close 250 processing plants and cut 30,000 jobs. And there certainly is a federal element to this, but just on a personal level, this has got to be, there has to be some sense of emotion here that the average person doesn't feel because of all the time that you spend at the Postal Service when you see stuff like this.
Well, you know, this is sort of near and dear to my heart because I spent my career there. And I was the CIO and CTO for 8 years, so I helped build the infrastructure that is now being used across the entire Postal Service. But I would tell you this is, in 2001, the Postal Service was a large organization that needed to rebuild itself, and we did. We, in essence, transformed ourselves. It took 3 or 4 years, and as soon as we were done with that in refining that, you really are never done. We transformed ourselves again in 2005, 2006. And they're going through it again. They're a large organization. They offer great services to every citizen out there. They have great employees. The management is not bad there. They do understand the movement of mail and packages, and they do know how to run a great business. But there's a lot of misconceptions about what they can and can't do. But I can tell you this, we cut billions of dollars in savings out of the organization over the last 10 years, and we did that proactively, and we did it with a lot of good intentions for the citizens, the employees, etc. But you get to a point where you have a lot of brick and mortar, and you no longer need it with the new technology, and so you, in essence, need to downsize it. And Congress wants to be involved in a lot of the decision-making, and in that case, you know, you sort of tie your hands. So they've come to a point now without Congress changing the business model that they really can't do much. But I'm kind of encouraged about this because there was 3 or 4 bills that were going through Congress, and they all had common themes about fixing the financial payments of the upfront payments of the health care and the retirement and stuff like that, that should have been fixed many years ago. So I really believe that early 2012, this is going to get fixed. The only thing I really worry about is every time something gets fixed from the legislative branch, they add this oversight, and this oversight usually is something that is hard to deal with.
The encouraging thing that I took away from each of the pieces of legislation that you referred to is my sense was that the Postal Service would have a lot more autonomy over their business model than they do now through each of these pieces of legislation, which I see the same way you do, it sounds like, as a very good thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've read things about their salaries. You've read about the closing all these facilities. They're going to basically put people out of work, et cetera. There's a philosophy at the Postal Service that when you came there to work as a career. And there was job progressions. People had opportunities. It's really a great place. And there's just some doubts and negativity on things that people just don't understand. And I would tell them that believe me, this will all get resolved, but it takes Congress to step in to help some of this, too.
There was something I saw in this piece, Dan, that reminded me when I was reading it last night of the kinds of conversations that you and I have off the air from time to time about, similar to what your number three story was, what things might look like 2, 5, 10 years from now. This sentence says, the changes, talking about the changes in delivery, the changes could slow everything from check payments to Netflix's DVD by mail, add cost to mail order prescription drugs, and even threaten the existence of newspapers and time-sensitive magazines delivered by postal carrier to far-flung suburban and rural communities. And it struck me that even the person that wrote this was thinking about the Postal Service as a 20th century business, because I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different goods that are delivered by the Postal Service that within 2 to 5 to 10 years, only one of them is likely to be delivered, not having anything to do with choices that the Postal Service made, just because of technological advances and because of market forces. So it strikes me that just about everybody, except maybe the Postal Service, is thinking about their business model the way it stands today instead of what it needs to be in the future.
So I'm going to echo Bob a little bit here. I think there are people – so first of all, by the way, for those – by absolute coincidence – when I was at Sun Microsystems, I supported the U.S. Postal Service, and I got to meet with the then very overwhelming CIO.
Most feared CIO in government.
Everyone was terrified of him, Bob Otto, which was really – I was very happy that he was going to be on the show. I think people at the Postal Service, in fact, are thinking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
The problem you have with the Postal Service is – It's neither a public organization anymore nor a private organization anymore. It has all these public responsibilities, but they pretend as if it should act like a private company.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't do both. So what's happening here is we've set up a model that isn't really economical. It's not agile enough.
Mm-hmm.
There are too many restrictions on the Postal Service in terms of how to act.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. government's going to have to is, of course, an interesting word, decide what is it they want the Postal Service to be and then let them be that.
Bob Otto's story number two on the countdown is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is USPS aims to close 250 processing plants, cut 30,000 jobs. You can read it on the Federal News Countdown page and on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. Dan Mintz's story number two on the Federal News Countdown when we return on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Iran showed footage of something it called the U.S. drone it captured over the weekend. But was it really? John Pike of GlobalSecurity.org told the AP the shape of the aircraft is different from that shown in most other photographs of the Sentinel, and it's in better shape than it would have been after a crash. Other sources say the drone the Iranians likely have was not the intelligence bonanza the Iranians claim it is. Auto-destruct capabilities likely wiped all of the sensitive information out. I'm J.J. Green.
We have a capsized boat, 2 people in the water.
Every day, EADS North America builds and supports helicopters for the Coast Guard, Army, National Guard, Navy, and Customs and Border Protection.
Rescue Swimmer is in the water.
EADS delivers helicopters that save lives every day, including those bright orange Coast Guard helicopters you see patrolling our nation's capital.
We got them. We're heading back.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Computers are a wonderful tool, but every day children are sexually solicited online. Protect your kids online. Visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators.
Hi, I'm Congressman Jerry Connolly. I want your children to be safe online. Talk with your kids about online safety. Know who is communicating with your child.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Want to win more government business? Need to gain a competitive edge? Visit GovWin.com. Deltek has combined input and Fed sources to create thousands of contracting opportunities worth over $1 trillion at GovWin.com. It's the market intelligence you need to jumpstart your sales efforts. Identify the right opportunities, assemble the right teams, capture the right contracts. Visit GovWin from Deltek to win more. Get started for free at GovWin.com/WTOP.
Staving off stroke. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. One way to reduce your risk of stroke is to maintain your brain. Strokes are often caused by a blockage in an artery that carries blood to the brain, so keeping your arteries healthy can reduce your risk of a stroke. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Amy Valderrama shares some ways on how to do it.
Eat a healthy diet that's low in saturated fat and cholesterol, high in fiber, and low in salt or sodium. Maintain a healthy weight, be physically active, don't smoke, and limit alcohol use.
If you or someone you know seems to be having a stroke, call 911 immediately. The sooner you get help, the greater the chances of recovery. And although strokes are more common among older people, they can happen at any age. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week, my guests are Bob Otto of AgileX, the former CIO at the Postal Service, and Dan Mintz of PowerTech, the former CIO at Transportation. And Dan Mintz, your story number two is from Government Computer News. The headline is State Department and Coast Guard to lash health records systems together. What did you see when you read this story? What did you read something between the lines here?
Well, so I saw two things. One, the immediate story, and second, a broader issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part is that whatever you think about healthcare and whatever you think about the various reforms and laws that are in place or things that are happening, there is no question that over the next 5 to 10 years, the provisioning of healthcare in the United States is going to change radically, one way or another. It's going to be different. And the thing that struck me about this was there's been a lot of activity combining veterans and DOD activities in terms of trying to work together in terms of healthcare records. But here are two agencies who, and particularly the State Department, which is not part of that orbit, that is not, you know, connected to that, the stuff that's really been the focus, who's now saying it is mature enough that they've made the management decisions that they're going to try and have common record keeping with, in this case, the Coast Guard, which ultimately, in my opinion, is going to tie them back to this veterans and DOD space.
Mm-hmm.
That's very significant. I mean, the big problem you have with electronic healthcare records right now, which people talk about more than do, is mass. That is enough people to use it so it's advantageous for other people to use.
Mm-hmm.
And this is you can see this beginning to happen. That more and more as these kinds of organizations start sharing common records, you're going to find it easier to do common healthcare transmission of information, I think, both in the public and eventually the private sector.
Bob, when I first saw this story, it's just the headline, I thought, these are two kind of interesting agencies to be getting into this business. Was that a reasonable response on my part, or was there something that I was missing?
I don't know. When I was reviewing this, I thought maybe this was a one-off experiment. And I was wondering how this was going to fit back into the rest of the plans between the military and VA.
Yeah.
So if you read in the article, it mentions that under the agreement, state and Coast Guard clinicians will also have access to the virtual lifetime electronic record that is being used for current and retired members of the U.S. Armed Forces.
Mm-hmm.
So the point being, and that's the second part, I've talked about this before. If I was able to push priorities for the IT community within the federal government, in my opinion, things that cause standardization of data are one of the things that deserve attention. Policy decisions get washed away from administration to administration. I mean, I experienced that when I left the last administration.
Mm-hmm.
But data standardization is sticky. It stays
mm-hmm.
because it's convenient. The fact that these agencies have come up with the standardization and have standardized it to the U.S. Armed Forces standard way of keeping record keeping will stay forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it will encourage other people to standardize on that. And that's really important as a result.
Well, if you can standardize the data here in this experiment with the bigger picture, then I agree with you. This will stay a long time. But if they're one off on this, then I view this as maybe this is not a good experiment.
Dan Mintz's story number two on the Federal News Countdown is headline, State Department and Coast Guard to lash health record systems together. It's from Government Computer News, and you can read it linked up now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The number one most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Dan Mintz and also by Bob Otto when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise high with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, my brother got an Insignia HD Radio Portable last month, and he really enjoys his workouts now.
Yep, HD Radio broadcasts are great. All kinds of new stuff on the HD2, HD3 channels.
And the Insignia HD Radio Portable is $49.99?
Yes, it's a great value.
Whoa, lead the way.
And did you know Insignia also offers an HD Radio Boombox for just $99?
Insignia HD Radio receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD Radio. More radio, more value.
Newsmakers on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Steve Kemp, Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service.
Fed Rooms provides cheaper booked rooms than generally you can get for government rate. We also help agencies select where to have conferences. So you might have 30 people coming from across the United States. You put into Fed Rooms where they're located, how many people are coming, and it calculates the best choice for you in terms of a city location.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Staving off stroke. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. One way to reduce your risk of stroke is to maintain your brain. Strokes are often caused by a blockage in an artery that carries blood to the brain, so keeping your arteries healthy can reduce your risk of a stroke. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Amy Valderrama shares some ways on how to do it.
Eat a healthy diet that's low in saturated fat and cholesterol, high in fiber and low in salt or sodium. Maintain a healthy weight, be physically active, don't smoke, and limit alcohol use.
If you or someone you know seems to be having a stroke, call 911 immediately. The sooner you get help, the greater the chances of recovery. And although strokes are more common among older people, they can happen at any age. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown. features the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen this week by Dan Mintz and by Bob Otto. And we are up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week as selected by Dan Mintz is from Defense Systems, and the headline is DISA makes headway on key enterprise initiatives. And this is kind of a, in part, a retrospective on what's happened to DISA this year, and it has been a big year for them. Dan, 50th anniversary of the organization moving because of BRAC to Fort Meade. Ronnie Hawkins taking over, returning there after leaving for a while and coming back to succeed General Pollitt. Just a big year for DISA. Why did this strike you as so significant this week?
So the reason is because of what it, in my mind, talks about in terms of a lot of trends that are going on in the federal government. And as we already talked about, cloud computing and the issues of trying to rearrange infrastructure and outsourcing or rearranging how we provision IT. This article tells me at least two or three different interesting things. The first thing is DISA is becoming more mature. If you look at the kinds of discussions that are going on, they're not the early discussions, which are just things like, should they be doing it at all?
Mm-hmm.
These are actually talking about accomplishments and the next steps. You know, how do we move email systems? How do we set up these networks? How do we get involved in enterprise systems? So it's sort of been accepted around the Department of Defense that DISA is a reasonable place to put some of these things. There's a push to them as opposed to a pull from them.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that in terms of some of the reference to what the Army is doing. The second thing is it brought to light the fact that when you're moving things from inside to outside, we pretend, and when I was at DOT, we pretend that when it's inside, it's great, and we're really worried about security and all these other things outside. In reality, inside is pretty messy. That was when they were moving the Army email system. It turned out one of their problems was not that it was hard to get it to DISA. It was such a mess inside the Army that they took them a long time to straighten out what was going on before they could transfer it. All these sins of lousy architecture become more obvious when you start maybe moving it to an outside provider.
Mm-hmm.
The final piece is, and I've talked about this before, the reason this is working at DOD is there's a center of gravity. DISA as an organization, the classical definition of outsourcing is, or this kind of shared service provisioning is, it's done externally. DISA is external to the operational organizations. It is a center of gravity that allows this to happen. My opinion still is you're not going to accomplish this very dramatically outside of DOD unless there's something that looks like the civilian version of DISA that can act like a center of gravity that you can move these shared services operations to. When shared services is included in the source organization, their mission always gets in the way of managing the shared service.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three things, the reason why this. And I think this is going to be very significant over the next number of years.
Now, Bob, Dan used a term that I've never heard you use the actual term before, but you and I have certainly spoken about the underlying idea, the term sins of lousy architecture, a pet peeve of yours over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a couple lessons to be learned here. First of all, if you're going to be an agency that wants to move to enterprise services or shared services, the network is the heart and soul of everything. That's first thing, and it has to be robust. Secondly is enterprise services are a lot different than a large application that you're scaling with 20,000 users here. I mean, the whole idea of performance and scaling and maintenance and open windows, et cetera, these are all things that are different for an enterprise service than an application. And every one of the agencies who are thinking about centralizing things and moving them to a shared set of services, they ought to go, in essence, review what DISA has gone through, because this is a good learning exercise.
What do you see as challenges after you've tried to do all of these things and apparently fairly successfully, according to not just the DISA people, but to some outsiders who are commenting on this in this article, Dan? What do you do for an encore, I guess, when you've had a year like this that DISA has had?
So, first of all, I think let's talk about three stages, and in some ways you should do it the other way around. The first stage is sort of dipping your toe in the water, proving that you can do it. The second stage would be to start really moving serious applications onto an infrastructure that you've improved enough that you can do the move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is in that second stage. The third stage, which is the important stage, and during some of the commercials break, we've been talking, Bob and I have been talking. The third stage, I think, ultimately, is how do you tie this kind of capability to improve the resulting mission? Cutting costs is fine, and it's important, and we're in tight budget times. But the power of this kind of change will never really be seen effectively until you think through how does this change the provisioning of IT to the ultimate customer of these services. And I think that would be – so this 2012, I would say, would be finished step two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the next step is to talk about – how does using an organization like this change the provisioning to the DoD mission?
Dan hits on something, Bob, that I hear all the time, and especially from people outside the agencies looking in, and that is the mission component is still getting lost in IT conception, requirements writing, acquisition, and deployment. And that is whatever the ultimate mission of the agency is, it isn't to deploy IT systems, it's to deliver the mail, protect and equip the warfighter, or whatever the mission of the agency is, and not just to make stuff work.
But technology people are finding that you have to be able to put in place a service that is robust enough that you're not sitting there fighting fires every day, but it is now the foundation to transform the way you do business for the next 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm. We have talked a lot about that concept today. Why do you think that your peers who are still in the jobs that you used to hold have such a hard time with that? Is it a time issue? Is it the fact that you don't have the luxury when you're sitting in the seat of being able to think that long term? Because I hear all the time, strategically, we're not where we probably should be.
So, organizations, whether they be in the public or private, are ultimately driven from the top and from the sources of revenue. The reason, in my opinion, IT typically in the federal government is focused on efficiency, how to do it a little bit cheaper as opposed to effectiveness, how to make the mission more effective, is twofold. One is, in many cases, they don't have the authority to make the changes. The Veterans Administration, where Roger Baker is one of the few places. I mean, there's some others.
I had it at Postal.
And Postal Service is another place that had the kind of budgetary authority over all IT spending.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is they don't have the authority to implement it. But the second, and it's a little bit life, large government departments are typically conglomerates without necessarily a clear strategic direction. So tying to the strategy becomes very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think everything's changed over the last 5 years in the respect that I had time to implement some of this technology. Now, because of the economy and the budget cuts, et cetera, the CIOs that are in the jobs they're in, they don't have the time and the luxury. They've got to find solutions that give them payback immediately.
I want to just do something I don't normally do on the countdown, and I want to assign a story number 1A to your story, Dan, about DISA from Defense Systems. DISA makes headway on key enterprise initiatives. If you haven't read the story in the Washington Post today, headline, Cyber Intruder Sparks Massive Federal Response and Debate Over Dealing with Threats by Ellen Nakashima, it's terrific. It's about, it's a deconstruction of the Buckshot Yankee incident at the Department of Defense. And it applies because a lot of the changes that have been going on at DISA kind of dovetail with the changes that have happened at the Pentagon in security with standing up Cyber Command and so forth that were brought on by Buckshot Yankee. So I'm gonna make an executive decision and attach that to your number one story on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. All these stories linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Bob Otto's story number one when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Meeting. Information Goals Through Technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Defense Department thinks it could eventually save up to $1 billion a year by consolidating its data centers. A consolidation plan DOD just released says the savings will come from reduced energy usage, personnel costs, real estate, software licensing, and other factors. Meanwhile, the department's getting ready to order a moratorium on the construction of new data centers, and several DOD components are adopting a strategy of shared services posted by the Defense Information Systems Agency.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here at 10 o'clock on WFED. Please join me this week for my special guest, Mary Agee, who's president and CEO of Northern Virginia Family Service. She'll tell you all about NVFS and its special needs. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. Check us out at ofplaw.com.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the Volunteers of America Chesapeake. This holiday season, give a gift that will last long after it's been unwrapped. Give the gift of hope to a man, woman, or child in need. Volunteers of America Chesapeake's Gifts of Hope provide alternative giving options, allowing you to give a gift that will touch and possibly change a life. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, chosen today by Bob Otto and Dan Mintz. And Bob Otto, your number one story of the week is Jason Miller's story from yesterday, headline: New FedRAMP Standards, First Step to Secure Cloud Computing. Now, I inadvertently asked you to tip your hand earlier in the program when I asked you about FedRAMP, so I apologize for that. Somebody trying to cash in. It's my understanding now that there are actually drinking games that go along with the Federal News Countdown, and I don't know how they work, but that's the buzz that I'm hearing when I go to some of these industry events. So at any rate, if somebody was playing the game, they got ahead of themselves, because you've already said that you liked what you saw overall in FedRAMP. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about, in a little more detail, what you saw there?
Well, I really did like this article, because I believe that the federal CIO should direct certain things across the government, and one of those is implementing standards. And I believe that standardized toolkits, templates, and doing things once and sharing it across the government is really a great thing. And the FedRAMP here on certification and accreditation for cloud services, I think this is excellent. I think that the CIOs need to think about this in each of their environments. I mean, the ability to standardize this and then utilize this is something that will save them money. Now, you know, one of the things I'm going to tell you is this first release doesn't have a lot of details behind it, so some people are going to be disappointed because there's not a lot of to do exactly how things are going to get done. But this, to me, is also an example of how hard it is to implement change management across the government. I mean, FedRAMP has been in existence for about a year, and basically there was broad consensus that we needed to do something here and standardize this, but the process has been really more of a walk than it's been a sprint. So, you know, will they deliver things in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? I believe they will, but I guess to get to the bottom line here on all this is I really find it discouraging from my perspective if I invent something that can be used across all the other federal agencies, why the other federal agencies would want to reinvent that wheel. So So.
Well, that's where my fear was, Dan, when I read Jason's piece, and then he came on the air and talked about it with me yesterday. Jason writes, Van Roekel said FedRAMP will promote the do once, use many approach, which, as Bob says, it's really easy to see the benefits of that. The hard part is getting people to actually do it, to buy into it, and to follow that guidance or mandate.
Yeah, it's what I call the desire to have management by shouting down the hall syndrome. People always like it to be right next to them so that they can sort of control it. But in fact, the reverse is true. That is, often when it's right down the hallway, it's done less well than by the centralized services, which is what the article talks about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to have some difficulties with that unless they can be mandated in some fashion, or there can be some incentive, some easier approval process if you go this way, FedRAMP, rather than in your own way. As I said, my feeling still is if you really want to be serious about this, you've got to create some kind of organizational center, external center of gravity that ultimately starts taking over shared services like cloud provisioning.
Could we wind up seeing that living in this joint authorization board at some point?
It's possible. It's obviously they've made some, you know, in effect, they're creating it indirectly of necessity.
Yeah.
But it would be more effective if they actually were able to have legislation, in my opinion, that established it.